Solakov alla Galleria Continua.
The exhibition is called A Riff Raff and comprises a body of work which ranges between 87 and just very recently, like 2009-2010. Very rarely I would combine in such way works, even though for the last years it happened twice that I could combine them, and apparently there is a kind of a inner connections between the works, even though the first ones they were done, let's say, a long time ago when I was much younger, when Bulgaria was a socialist country. Yeah, there is a connection.
Era il 1991 quando Solakov dipinse Family e Associate, due lavori che non lasciano margine di immaginazione e dipingono piuttosto un crudo e ferale ritratto della società bulgara di quegli anni. Nel 1988, poco prima del crollo del blocco sovietico, aveva dipinto The Day Shall Come, un augurio di mala sorte ai bad guy bulgari. Oggi, a 30 anni di distanza, quegli stessi lavori occupano gli spazi della Galleria Continua, in un gioco di rimandi con le opere più recenti, commentari sarcastici alle sue stesse aspettative disilluse, tra tutte Silent but as rich as only Bulgarian language can be, F-Words, un video del 2009.
I mean, they come from early 90s, which means that it was done like in 1990-91, which means that it's like a 1 or 2 years after the beginning of the so-called changes, when everything was kind of in a process of re-evaluation. Nothing was taken for granted, and maybe such kind of things that exist in my society before, but at least they were not in the media, in a way. But maybe I was kind of shocked what the media say happened in this place or any other place in present Bulgaria. Actually, the real life offers much more, I would say, much more heavy life situations than the ones which they are described there. In a way, they exist like a pair, the two works. Family, for example, in the center you have this very quiet family scene, and around you have frames which they show rather violent relationships, supposedly subconscious in the minds of the protagonists. The other piece associates so shows the other way around. In the center you have the bad thing going on, a kind of a rape involving the subjects from the outside paintings, where they happen to be very common and very proper citizens, sleeping, eating, going to manifestations or queuing online or something like that. In a way, the other work, which is called The Day Shall Come, is related to that piece, because this red piece, which was done in 88, kind of shows my desire and my dream that the day will come when, let's say, the bad guys, or not necessarily the bad guys, but the people ruling the country will find their place, which according to the picture should be somewhere in hell. And this was done like 1.5 years before the changes, and have in mind that nobody thought that there would be any changes at that time. So this one reveals a kind of a very naive and kind of a dream of a much younger man who thinks that everything will be fine as soon as the present, I would not call it regime, the present state will be exchanged with another one, like a more fair one. And so then comes this video, which there is a certain point in the exhibition that you can see both of them. And the video is called Silent, but as rich as only the Bulgarian language can be, F words. And basically shows me, shot in Sofia last May. And I'm walking very vigorously, apparently really like very nervous and really want to say something, to shout something. And I appear in front of the parliament in Sofia, in front of the presidency and the government building. And I start yelling and cursing in a really very, very rich way, which only a Slavic language can provide. And the only thing is that actually you don't hear me. so it's just yelling. You can hear the sound of the city. You can only read if you are Bulgarian, you can only read my lips. So this is like a very self-ironical and self-sarcastic, in a way, mocking myself, because, 20 years after this work, the red one, I'm already in a completely other state. In a way, I'm again kind of against such a government, which apparently doesn't fulfill that dream which I had before. At the same time, I identify myself as a kind of a common Bulgarian, because Bulgarians were notorious with this, that we are constantly murmuring about this or that, and constantly talking against the government or politicians. But at the same time, this way of behavior, it's rather far away from a proper civil society. I'm also complaining and yelling silently, but since 1990, I didn't go to vote. So it's very self-ironical work. That work you are referring to is called A Recent Story with Ghosts, a pair of high heel shoes, a couple of flats and some other mischievous acts. Maybe the most politically, I'm talking about Bulgaria, involved piece I've ever done. Here there are some real people, some real persons, and a lot of really outrageously bad things which they happen in my country. Still nobody was charged for these killed people in this or that accident. So basically what I've done, I kind of made guilty for all of this the ghosts of medieval kings and emperors, just like a savage who can't explain why this one happens, why there is a thunder bolt which lights, let's say, his tent, and then he explains this with kind of supernatural forces. And in the same fashion, I just kind of give up, and I can't explain for myself, at least, why this one happens in a society at the beginning of 21st century. And I'm just saying, okay, the ghosts are guilty for this. This one is called Who's More Important? It's the most recent work done, basically done yesterday. Completed yesterday. Very often I'm trying to use as much as possible, let's say, other people's decisions in order to be created a kind of a ready-made, and then I'm entering this ready-made and I'm making a certain story. For example, these golden pieces that you see, the so-called icons in quotation marks, I work with a wood carver. And when I want to order a new work, let's say driving to this wood carver, I have no idea whatsoever what kind of composition I would like to order him. And this is my a personal suspense. It's like a real fun. I mean, appearing in front of him and then telling him, okay, please give me a piece of paper. And at the moment when he gives me the piece of paper and a pencil, and then I just make something like a real sketch, but I mainly explain him, and this is something which just pops in my mind, how visually this should look like a bit. But I don't know the story at all, and I press myself not to think about eventual story. For example, I'm telling him, okay, this one should look a little bit like leaf. So you have this we are talking about the leader, should look a little bit like a leaf, and you have this a flat surface in the middle where eventually I can do something, and you can use this, and then this person makes a kind of a carton, you know, 1-to-1 scale, and then we discuss, is it good or not? Then he starts working. I still don't know the story. At the end, I give it to the lady who is going to gild it. She does this. And at a certain moment, I have to say, okay, which part of that piece shouldn't be covered with gold in order to do some painting on top. And then I decide this, but I still don't know that there will be this kind of story. And at the moment when I get this one with the empty, a space in the middle, and I start kind of painting something, and then appears a story, which is very vague, because I does this kind of man who comes out of a kind of a womb, but I still don't know exactly the story. And then as soon as this is ready, I sit in front of the laptop and I and I write the story. And then I send to the editor, and then I just do the actual text on the work. So why I'm explaining you this one so thoroughly is just to tell you that I really like to use such kind of ready-madeness of I would like to, this is not because I can't tell exactly what I want. I can tell many things. But I really would like to use the other people's decision-making, how this one should look like. The same goes for this long story was like a, like a starter to explain you why the sculpture looks like that. I just told them, please make me this plinth, which is this and this size, and then make this cylinder, then this pyramid, forcing myself not to think at all how this one will look like. Basically, the story explains exactly what happened yesterday with Maurizio and my wife Slava. I mean, they just made the display and Veruska helped with this green thing, and then I just wrote the story. My mother, for example, she used to tell me a lot of fairy tales when I was a young boy. And later on, I also read a lot. But nowadays, it doesn't, I'm not getting inspired of any literature for my own stories. I read not so much as I would like to read, or I used to read, for example. On the other hand, I watch a lot of movies, really a lot. And it's a different kind of movies, and maybe subconsciously what I would like to see with the films is how, let's say if we talk about the Hollywood movies, how at certain points the people there, these big studios, they decide that in general the people are ready for this or for that move into the script, for this or that move into the public understanding, who is the bad guy, who is a good guy, who presumably is a good guy, could become a little bit bad guy, you see? And this is very extremely interesting for me. I'm not saying that I'm using this one for my own work to see my limits, because usually I don't put myself limits. But for me this is extremely interesting. For example, it's very interesting in the 70s, 80s, early 90s to see, let's say, the position of a black person in the American films, for example, the police moves. See the little weapon, the lethal weapon, when you have the two characters, Danny Glover and Mel Gibson. So he's actually superior, Danny Glover. But it was still not possible at that time, in the late 80s and early 90s, to have a guy who, for example, is the head of the CIA. If you remember this, the Patriotic Games with Harrison Ford, there was a black person who was like a deputy director of CIA. And only in a kind of a fictitious science fiction so-called film, which was The Fifth Element, I think, the United States president was a black person. Now we have a black person. And then it's extremely interesting to see at what point they decide, and because they're really good, in order to get money, they really need to know what the people think. At what point they will decide that they could make another type of fun to the black people? Because they have to make fun of the black people. If he's on the top of the top country, you know, you have to make fun of him. Otherwise, it will not sell. It will not sell. So these kind of things are extremely interesting for me. Oh yeah, there are a lot of stereotypes. If you watch like old films, for example, the last 2 days I was watching The French Connection with Gene Hackman, Friedkin, and Oppenheimer, and it was completely different the way these films like give you, what you see there from any kind of like a similar movie nowadays. The things they change completely. Here, because I'm dealing with a certain iconography, which everybody knows, for most of the pieces in this 23 drawing series, the people, they know perfectly well the iconography, let's say the Pietà iconography, but now you see it from the back, or Saint Christopher, who is walking through the water with Jesus Christ on top, but now you see his feet underwater, how it works, or certain things that we know very well the moment, for example, the three kings are giving the gifts to the famous nativity scene, but what I'm showing now, I'm showing it a little bit later when Joseph was for first time with his wife. They have to look a little bit like a snapshots, because you are telling a certain story about a certain moment. And I love classical art, so especially for that one, of course, you have to have a lot of knowledge. And they just came up all of these ideas in my mind just because I know so much about classical art, and I know how usually they look like, all of these scenes of Annunciation or Crucifixion. This is for connoisseurs, if I may say so. I very openly state in many other works that there are a lot of stories inside, and for me it's fine if they don't get it. But there are a lot of stories which they're really for like people who know things. In my big narrative installations, I'm perfectly aware of this, that okay, the main story in general, everybody gets it, because it's easy. But then you have different levels of other stories, and hopefully I'm not forcing the people to get all of them, and some of them, they're really for connoisseurs in a way. Yeah, you see my attitude here about the destroyed public sculpture, the film which is there in the show. So far I had no like a really commissioned pieces like this, even though I took part in I think maybe like a two or three competitions for like a public or at least like a corporate sculptures or something. But he didn't make it, they didn't get my sense of humor again. One of them was for the European Investment Bank in Luxembourg for like a 15 years ago. And what I proposed them was on the lawn, the grass in front of the one of the big halls of the European Investment Bank, when usually the financial ministers of EU are having their council. So I proposed to have a huge beggar's hat made by bronze. And in one of the inner courtyard of the bank to have made by stainless steel, so very shiny, silverish, one dollar bill, but high like a 5 meters. They didn't get that sense of humor. Also, once I was in a competition for a work to commemorate Theodor Adorno in Frankfurt in a small square. I think it was 7-8 years ago. What I proposed actually was to have a kind of a foundation, and on the top to have a plate which as a design to look from a distance, because you have the name of Theodor Adorno, but as a design to look really like here used to live, da-da-da-da-da. But when you come closer, you read to that, of course, he was supposed to be the monument of one of the main, critics of the so-called mass culture. And at the end, the city council decided to halt this erection of the monument and to give all the money to make it the environment around this square kind of a more vivid or more life or something like that was. They didn't get that, yeah. So you see, with that attitude of mine, it's very hard to get a public art, at least to have like a public institutions which they could give you money for something which they're not sure is it worth to have such attitude. But you are very right that sometimes I have even, I would say, like an intervention in the public space, which is not necessarily like a three-dimensional space. It's also in the people's minds, which they could be considered as art. It involves the public. It involves the public in a rather socialist way. When I told them that I had kind of nostalgic feeling, they really didn't get what I was talking about, but the whole thing, okay, now we want to involve all of these people around, all of these minorities. I mean, it sounded extremely the way that we were doing things, going back to the people, I mean, in the 70s when I was young, going back to the people or going among all of these youngsters and drawing them. I really enjoyed what I've done there. It was very funny. There was the winner of the competition. It's not really a competition, it was a lottery. Yeah, the competition was in Darmstadt. I'm talking about this public reactions. Actually, the last summer there was extremely split reactions on one of my last big solo exhibitions called Emotions Without Masks in Mathildenhöhe in Darmstadt. So after this was shown in September 2008 in Kunstmuseum Bonn, and then in early 2009 in Kunstmuseum St. Gallen. So the third venue was this Institut Mathildenhöhe in Darmstadt. And what I've done there, I kind of really didn't want to do the exhibition again, even though between Bonn and St. Gallen there were a lot of differences. And it's a very special place, that one. And the space shows contemporary art, but at the same time you have such kind of blockbuster exhibitions like Russland, or the show which was before mine called Masks from Rodin to Picasso. So what I did, basically, I asked the curator after the show of Masks is over to leave the entire layout of that exhibition, changing nothing. Neither the labels, neither the lighting, neither the pedestals, neither the plexiglass covers, neither the light, which was letting in a very precious way. You can imagine how a show of Masks could look like nowadays. And then all of my works, which were supposed to be in the same spaces, they remain in their crates. At the beginning of the show, there was a story why I was doing this. And there was a beautifully done model by one of the assistants in the place, 1 to 50 scale, where I told the curator to place small replica of all the works of mine the way he wanted they to be, but they were not. All the works, they remain in the crates, and in the these lit spaces when there are no masks, but you can see these small devices which they were supporting them, there were little stories. Yeah, you can imagine what kind of stories were there, which some of them, they were again devoted to emotions. And then the reactions of the people were extremely split. Half of them were really raving that this was the best show they've seen in years. The other half, they wanted their money back, because they say, we want to see the exhibition, and the exhibition is in the crates. And they start like collecting signatures, writing to the mayor that they wanted to have the really silly reaction. Yeah, so it's also public art, you see? Public is very much involved in it. It's not a regular public's reaction in an exhibition, either good or bad. There is no answer on that one. I really enjoy, frankly speaking, the exhibition. It was curated by Mami Kataoka for Hayward Gallery in London, although the show was very much criticized in London. And I would say that the British people, okay, we know the British sense of humor, they shouldn't do that, because the title of the show clearly stated that it's a foreign language. So at least you have to be a little bit more generous to the foreign language. If it says laughing, just laughing, okay, criticize that there is nothing funny about it. But it's a laughing in a foreign language. When you say it's a foreign language, you can't say against the sense of humor inside, on my opinion, nothing. It's a good question, because my sense of humor and my sense of absurd might not work. And definitely it doesn't work in certain places, but I'm trying not to use it in that same fashion. For example, in Japan, in a center called Kitakushu, Center for Contemporary Art in Kitakushu, I was invited for a residence. This was almost 10 years ago. Their exhibition space is kind of a typical white cube, although the ceiling is full with kind of a net of pipes and ventilation devices. The walls are 4.50 meters high. So what I did there as an exhibition, I placed a lot of stories up there in 4.50 meters. So you can see there is an object there, maybe there is a text, but you can't read it. And they were specially produced 50 catalogs with close-ups of all the stories. And you start from left to right. And then you have these Japanese people, and this is not Tokyo. They were extremely polite, and very carefully, very politely, they were walking from left to right, which is against the usual way of reading whatever from right to left. And they were looking up and they were looking down at the image. And on the left-hand side page, there was a translation in Japanese of the text. Again, they're looking up and again, they're looking down. What did they get from my sense of humor? I don't know, but they just, they made the drill. So they made the entire circle of all the work. With a sense of humor, it's very tricky. Extremely amusing was one thing which happened with the famous Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So when the film was shown in Japan, it's about the heroes there. They're searching for Holy Grail, of course. And one of the funny stories that at certain moment, the heroes, they appear in front of a castle. Apparently in the castle, there are French people. And John Cleese is up there. And these guys, King Arthur and the others, they say, "Oh, I'm King Arthur, I'm for the Holy Grail." And then John Cleese up, who is the French soldier, he says, "We already got one here." Which means that there are like at least two of them. And then he's kind of giggling to his fellow soldiers. "I already told them that we already got one here." So in Japan, this line was translated as a, "They made a joke." So if that film, which plays with the uniqueness of the Grail, because there is no two Grails, you have only one Grail. If that one they translate as that they made a joke. So you see, sometimes could be very dangerous to laugh.
Radio Papesse è un progetto di Ilaria Gadens, Carola Haupt e Cristiano Magi.